You know, for the 50th anniversary of Earth Day earlier this year, we spotlighted A Climate for Change. It was the first of three documentaries produced by Green Island Films. Part two rolls out tonight on KGMB at 7. Take a listen to this segment about one of Hawaii's seabirds, the Laysan albatross.
So mid-November, they start showing up. Generally, the males show up first, and then the females show up a little couple days later. They reconnect. They mate for life. They socialize, then they preen, and then they snuggle, and then they mate. The female lays her egg. The next morning she gets up, she starts pulling the pine needles that are on this hillside below the ironwoods into a big mound. She's a nest in the ground for the next 6 months.
Should we come from this side?
It's better to come from this side, though, but there's a nene nesting right over here.
I'll try to avoid the nene then.
Yeah, there are two eggs.
That one's not fertile, okay? So just keep that one. I'll get you the other one. Let's just, I'll get both of them.
You know, that film also covers efforts to protect our coral reefs. Filmmaker Anthony Alto dedicated the film to the coral research of the late Ruth Gates, who was the director of the Institute of Marine Biology at Coconut Island.
Ruth Gates was a superstar in the academic world, and she, you know, it's very difficult to make people care about corals. I mean, we care about them more here in Hawaii probably than just about everywhere else, and that's because our culture is so tied into it, and, you know, surfing and what have you. But for most people, coral seems inanimate. A lot of people actually don't even know that it's alive, and so it's very difficult to attract funding. It's not like an elephant or a rhinoceros or one of the megafauna that people can look at, or a polar bear, and they go, oh, Ruth was very good at bringing attention and bringing money to research on corals. I mean, she was just an extraordinary character. And she discovered that she had a brain tumor, and she was gone within less than a year. And it was a tragedy that was felt. There were reverberations felt throughout the academic world. A great loss to the world and a great loss to Hawaii.
And you dedicated this film to her, and you start out the film talking about the state of our coral reefs there off Coconut Island.
That's right. And, you know, we thought we would be focusing on Ruth's research, but we found out about the work that is being done at the Coral Nursery, which is a division of the State Department of Land and Natural Resources. And they didn't so much adopt an academic research approach as they approached it from the point of view almost as professional aquarium specialists. And they developed techniques for feeding and caring for coral. And what they found is they can accelerate the growth of coral by something like 20 times. A coral that would take 20 years to grow in the ocean, they can grow in a year in the nursery. And obviously, this holds out great hope for the future, that we may be able to restore our reefs as we're suffering the depredations of coral bleaching, which we are increasingly every year. We've already lost 30% of our reefs here in Hawaii. This holds out some real hope. Obviously, that hope has got to be built on a foundation of, we're going to do everything we can to stop our planet heating. And we're nowhere near that point at the moment. And what I'm trying to do with these films is come up with a mixture of items to give people hope, because most of the time when you talk about climate change to people who aren't deeply involved in it, they become very quickly overwhelmed and very depressed. It looks like such an enormous problem that they literally just don't want to hear anymore, that you turn them off by telling them how bad things are. And so crucially in this mix, I think you have to have some elements of hope. And this program at the Coral Restoration Nursery that the DLNR is running is a great program. And it's not the only one. I mean, we also looked at another program to do with albatross. So in the first episode, the focus is on the impacts today of climate change in Hawaii, that looked at people, at this family of native Hawaiians who've lived in the same location for 14 generations, but are probably unable to continue to do so for much longer because it's raining so much more than it used to. Their river is flooding so much more than it did, that they may no longer be able to live there. So this time we thought, okay, we've looked at what it does to people. Let's look at what it does to other species. So we looked at the corals, and then we looked at albatross. And the reality with albatross is that they're losing their habitat up in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands because of sea level rise. And so there is this program on Kauai to to move eggs from the Pacific Missile Range Facility, where the albatross are endangered because of bird strikes with the aircraft taking off and landing. They're taking those eggs, and they can check and see if they're fertile. And if they are, they're moving this to a new location up on the North Shore of Hawaii, which is well above any potential future sea level rise. And they've been successful in establishing a colony there. So that's another great story and another great piece of news. But as we're covering this, we're interviewing the guy, the researcher, Eric Landerworth, who's in charge of this. And he's saying, look, if we're doing this because we're worried about the habitat of the albatross in Hawaiian Islands, then maybe we should be paying attention. They're like a canary in a coal mine. They're a warning of what, if this is happening to them, it could be happening to us sometime in the future. So even the optimistic, the hopeful messages, they are hopeful, but they do contain an underlying message, an underlying warning. And from that, if you like, I guess we then start to look at what I think of as some of the darker stuff. Two things in particular in this episode, which is one is plastics and the other is waste. And the reason we look at plastics is because there's been a lot of pushback on the effort to cut back on single-use plastics. There's a lot of mockery about wealthy, well-to-do, middle-class people saying no to a plastic straw as if that's going to change the world. And I felt the need to push back on that because 40% of all plastics are single-use. So if we were to get rid of single-use plastics, it would have a huge impact. And plastics themselves have a huge impact on the environment. They release millions of tons of greenhouse gases every year just in their manufacture, and they continue to produce those gases. They off-gas those emissions throughout their lives, long after we finish using them, when they're floating around in the air or strewn on a beach or in the water. They're still producing methane and CO2 that's being emitted into the atmosphere. And the plastics industry, the oil, most people don't understand, 99% of plastics is oil, coal, and gas. And even if you were able to produce plastics 100% with clean energy, you would still only cut their carbon footprint in half. And less than 10% of all plastics ever produced have ever been recycled. And the impact on people's health of these things getting into our systems, which is happening increasingly, is just extraordinary. So the idea that saying no to a plastic straw is laughable is nonsense. It's actually vital. And for a lot of people, saying no to a plastic straw is the first step in becoming part of that global movement that is saying to those in power, both in corporate power and political power, enough. We have to change.
It's interesting because during these COVID times, with everybody focused on going back to school, while there may be plans to move to reusable utensils in schools, many schools are just keeping to using the plastic forks and knives and spoons, and it is creating a lot more waste.
We're living through a time where we're seeing, you know, conundrums all over the place. I mean, it's also true that the pandemic has resulted in a huge net decrease in global emissions, temporarily at least, but it's provided a pause, and everybody's seen the impact of the pause. You know, there are people in New Delhi in India who are seeing a blue sky above their heads for the first time in their lives. And the same is true in metropolises all across the world, from Los Angeles to you name it. So we can see the benefit as well as seeing some of the potential problems. I'm not particularly worried about that specific example you mentioned, because it just so happens that the Food Services Division of the State's Department of Education is an extremely progressive organization that is very much trying to tackle these issues. They did away with all styrofoam containers more than a year ago at the stroke of a pen. They didn't wait for any legislation. The head of the department there, Albert Scales, got an email from a student one day saying, how come you're still using styrofoam containers in school cafeteria? And he said, you know what? I'd never thought about it before, but as soon as I saw that, I thought, that kid is right. And he just signed an order, no more styrofoam. So even if they're forced on a temporary basis to bring back disposable utensils, I'm sure that's not going to last for long. Nobody's saying that we have to do away with all plastics. And obviously, the medical use is one area where they are, at least at the moment, pretty much essential. But, I mean, let's start with the stuff where we can have some influence. And 40%, as I said, 40% of plastics are single use, mainly used in packaging. And most of the corporates involved in this have pushed back against efforts to get them to move to eco-packaging, because they say that consumers won't pay the price. So that's absolutely something within our control. We are not yet exploiting our power as consumers. 70% of the economy is based on consumer spending. And in this episode, one of the people we talked to is an academic, Peter Victor, who has devoted his entire career to researching whether it's possible to have prosperity without economic growth. Because clearly we cannot continue to have this uncontrolled economic growth and exploitation of Earth's resources because there aren't enough resources. If everybody lived the way we did, we'd need five planet Earths. Everybody knows this at this point. And the rest of the world is trying to catch up to our standard of living. And they have a right to. We can't say no to them. So clearly we have an obligation to show them a model of a sustainable standard of living.
That film debuts tonight on KGMB and will run several times through August. The third installment of the environmental films will focus on food and agriculture. Aalto hopes to resume filming in our schools for the final in the series later this fall.